Okay, well, we are on session four. Okay, well, we've talked about what's the gospel. We've talked a little bit about our theology and our government. And those are all large, really big framework sorts of questions that hopefully will give you an idea of where Trinity is in the world and in church history and in theology compared to everything else. So, but at the same time, everything that we've talked about before would be true of any other PCA church, many other churches. So what we want to do now is shift our focus and narrow our focus to talk more specifically in these next two sessions about this local church, our congregation. And we want to first talk about our community life together. When we say community, we're talking about our spiritual life together. Okay? When we use the word community, we use that a lot of times to talk about a geographical community, you know, the Garden District or the Cloverdale community or, East Montgomery community or something like that. Sometimes we talk about it, we use that term to talk about an affinity, like the arts and the fine arts community or the music community or something like that, sports community. But we're using that term to talk about our spiritual community, okay? We're scattered. Our membership is scattered in all different parts of Montgomery, all different socioeconomic strata, different ways. We're scattered all over the place, nationalities, races, etc. But we have our common life together and spiritually, so that's what we want to talk about. When we talk about the church as a community, we're really talking about how we do what the Bible calls one anothering. Okay? One anothering. The Bible often uses that term, one another, or loving one another. That term, one another, appears 91 times in the New Testament, 53 times in the pastoral epistles of 1st and 2nd Timothy and Titus, which are specific instructions to the churches. They're oftentimes connected with a verb or an imperative, like love one another or confess your sins to one another, pray for one another, those kinds of things. So these one another passages teach us what it's like to practice the community, to carry out what it means to be a community of believers who are living together the Christian life. Another way to see this is to look at how the Bible describes the community. It describes us as a body of Christ. The Bible even says, you know, the hand can't say, well, I don't want to live with the rest of the body, so I'm going to separate myself and go live over here. If you separated your hand from your body, your hand wouldn't live, right? And so different parts of the body can't say, well, we just want to live independently of the rest of the body. Our eyes can't say, I want to pop out of the body and live over here. Can't do that. So we're interdependent on each other. It's also described as a family or a household. So the point here is simply to say that the believers, the church, a local church, is a local manifestation of the body of Christ. And when we're gathered together to live life together, we're not gathered together simply to be in the same place. There's a shared common life. Now, the common life is not that we all like the same football team or that we all live in the same neighborhood or that we all even like the same thing. We may not even all be friends in the same sense. You know, it might be that, you know, we really don't have a lot in common outside of Jesus. But Jesus is enough. And what we're doing is we're saying we're coming together to follow Jesus together. We're the band of brothers. We're going to stay together. In fact, Jesus said that the one characteristic that's going to prove to the world that we're his disciples is that we love one another. not how we love the world, but how we love one another. So this is a pretty important deal, the church as community. And I want to go through what we call the care network or the community network. What things do we have in place to care for one another? How does care happen? How does loving one another happen? And it's not one thing, okay? It's not one specific strategy. It's a lot of different things. It's really like a net of things. And it includes the ministers, the elders, the Sunday schools, hospital visitation team, women in the minister, women in the church, Stephen, congregational care, and the membership. And I want to talk about each one of these and how they play a role in our providing care for one another. Okay? So first of all, the ministers. The ministers are pastors. Okay? That's our specific calling. The word pastor really refers to being like pastoral or shepherds, you know, watching over people. That's the term there. And Claude McRoberts, our senior minister, and Michael Howell are the two ministers primarily assigned to this task. Michael is the pastoral care minister, minister of pastoral care. A lot of churches, some pastors of churches this size don't like to be involved in pastoral care, but Claude does. That's just, he feels like that's a big part of his calling. And so he is in the hospitals. He's in the homes. He's being with people. It's a big job, and so Michael carries a lot of responsibility for that as well. We have about 30 to 35 homebound members at any given time. Michael visits with them. So my point is that Claude and Michael carry the primary role of representing Christ, being with people, okay? So they're out with people. Claude is accessible to you. The reason I'm doing what I'm doing as executive minister is so that Claude can do, in large part, can go do this, okay? You will probably not see me at the hospital if you're in the hospital or in a crisis. That's just not what I do. I'm here overseeing the staff. We've got preschool. We've got 75 kids in the preschool. We've got 20 people on staff. We've got all these ministries that are going on, the business stuff that's happening. I'm here running this place so that Claude has freedom to go out and do other things, okay? So, but Claude is doing that now. A lot of churches don't do that, but Claude does. So you will see, if you're in a crisis situation, Claude and Michael are the ones that you can call. A lot of people have Claude's direct personal cell phone number, and you can text him. We joke that he has a texting ministry, but you can text him, call him. He's very accessible, okay? So is Michael. And the other staff will be there to help if necessary, but primarily it's just those two. Okay. Another strategy that we have in place is our elders helping the ministers provide pastoral care. And so we even refer to our elders as shepherds or under-shepherds. We do this primarily through the Sunday schools. We have about, I think we have 16 actually. I think we have 16 adult Sunday schools now. And each class has an elder from the session assigned to that class. Okay, and they usually, if they're not in the class every week, or if that's not their regular class, a lot of them, that's their regular class. If it's not their regular class, they try to make a visit at least once a month to the class, just to build a relationship so that people can have someone else besides the ministers to call. You know, our staff has been here a while. We've got, you know, we're a pretty tenured staff, but not all churches are like that. And one thing that you'll find true the longer you're a member somewhere is that you oftentimes have a relationship with the elders longer than you have a relationship with the clergy, because they're in the community and you may know them for your entire life, and they may know you as well, very, very well. So the elders are an important part of this. The elders are not necessarily trained to provide all the pastoral care that's necessary, but they can get you to the right place. Okay? So their job is not to provide spiritual counsel, but they'll get you to the place where you can get spiritual counsel. Or they may not be able to help with this particular crisis, but they'll get you to the right place. And they're a confidential, trusted person that will help get you to the right place. Okay? So we have, for those who are not in a Sunday school class, I'm going to come to that in a minute, but for those who are not in a Sunday school class, like these homebound, we've got 24 prospects with 125 out of church. For some people who can't be actively involved in a Sunday school, we put them in another group and an elder has them and is assigned to them. So the homebound actually have an elder assigned to them. So elders are acting as shepherds. They're available to give spiritual watch and oversight and assist the ministers. The Sunday school. Any more questions? Okay. Sunday schools also are a huge part of our pastoral care or care strategy. Trinity Church is a large church. Okay. 1,400 members, over 1,400 members. Any of y'all ever heard of Dunbar's number? Dunbar was a sociologist, and he came up with a theory and then went out and tested it. And his theory was that people can only have in their life about 125 or 150 close relationships, that we just can't maintain close relationships with more people than that. And he went out and tried to verify this. He looked at different cultures and their people groups and, you know, Scottish clans and African tribes and Aborigines and Americans and Europeans. He looked at everybody and pretty much verified that people can only have about 125 or 150 relationships. That's it. And I like telling people that a number of years ago I read an article where a guy had hundreds, maybe even thousands of Facebook friends. And so he decided to test Dunbar's number versus his Facebook friends. So he started contacting each one of his Facebook friends. And if they didn't have a meaningful connection within a certain amount of time, I can never remember what it is. He unfriended or defriended? I'm not on Facebook. So he unfriended. Okay. So he unfriended them. And he ran that process for a year. And after a year, he had about 125 or 150 friends they had a meaningful close contact with. So it's been proven, and I think we see that to be the case. So here's my point. Trinity Church is 1,400 members. You can't know 1,400 members. And in churches, what we see, church growth people will talk about what's called the 200 barrier in a church. The 200 barrier in a church is when a church, most churches in the world, 85, 90, maybe even more, a higher percentage than that, are 200 people or less. And the reason is because in that small of a church, everybody knows everyone. Everybody does everything together, and everybody knows everybody in the church. Churches that are larger than that have broken through the 200 barrier, and they have another way of connecting to people rather than just trying to connect with everybody. Well, in our church, it's Sunday school, because you cannot connect with 1,400 people. Nobody can. Nobody here at this church is connected with all 1,400 people. You have to have a smaller group within the church to get connected with. And for some churches, they choose small groups. For some churches, they choose community groups. For us, it's Sunday school. That's just what this church does. And, you know, it's not right or wrong. It's not written in the scriptures anywhere. That's just what we do. So we've got Sunday school communities. And we really want you to get involved in a Sunday school community. We're going to talk about it a lot. We're going to kind of nag you about it. We're going to keep talking to you about it until you join a Sunday school. Because I'm telling you, if you don't, you'll fall through the cracks. You cannot just start randomly meeting people. There are some outlier situations, but most of those people were born in this church. They're about 80 years old, and they've just seen everything. and so they don't count. Okay. So this is how we talk about our church in three different levels. We talk about the congregation, which that should be 1,400. That's the entire body at Trinity Church. Then we talk about our community, Okay, this is the Sunday school class. This provides our context for one anothering to each, among members. These classes are 12 to 100 in size. And then a smaller group than that is what we call a cell group or a small group. I'll talk about those later. Small group Bible studies, accountability groups. This could be two people together. It could be 10 people together. Now, in your packet, I think you've got a white stapled booklet that says Get Plugged In. And that's a listing of the Sunday school. So if you've not found a Sunday school community, really want to encourage you to browse through that. And Becky will help you find it. Typically what we recommend is, we'll, depending on the person, we might recommend 2 to 3 to 4 Sunday school classes to go visit. Go hang out with them for a while. See if you click with them. See if you click with the teaching. See if you click with the people. And then plug in and get to know them. Okay? And if they don't, if they're not nice to you, talk to me or Becky. No, they will be. They'll welcome you in. They'll welcome you in. But so Sunday school is our community. Okay? We also have a hospital visitation team. This is a team of about 10 that rotate visitation to all those in the hospital. If you're in the hospital, this team will make sure that you're visited every day that you're in the hospital. So they take a week at a time and somebody comes by and sees you. It's a nice thing. And this would be in addition to, the ministers. And by the way, we say hospital, I know there are a lot of procedures that people have that are just sort of routine procedures, but we're talking about life-threatening issues. I mean, if you want somebody to come, if you're having a hangnail removed, and you want somebody to come, we'll come. But, typically the reason a hospital is connected with visitation is because, well, certainly a long time ago, if you went to the hospital, things were serious. We go to the hospital all the time. We're in and out doing outpatient stuff all the time, having things removed and put back together and that kind of thing. But, my grandparents' generation, if you went to the hospital, it was a good chance you weren't getting out alive. It was just serious, life-threatening. So my point is, sometimes we talk about hospital visitation, but I want you to think in terms of crisis. We don't want you to be in crisis and not get help. And it could be a loss. It could be a life-threatening issue. It could be a relational crisis. It could be an emotional, whatever it is. That's what we're talking about. So it's not just all general hospital stuff. We're not trying to get up all in everybody's hospital business, but talking about crisis situations. The women in the church do an enormous amount of care. Let me just give you some examples. They take condolence meals to those who've lost a loved one. They take flowers to those who are sick or in the hospital. So the flowers that you see in the sanctuary are broken down every Monday, and those flowers are distributed to those who are sick or in the hospital or just need some cheer, some beauty. They take Helping Hands meals to those who are in need. The Lydia Ministry visits and sends cards to homebound members. College students are contacted and encouraged. So the women in the church do an enormous amount of care ministry. The Stephen Ministry is a ministry of the diaconate, the deacons. They give temporary financial assistance to members who are in need. So sometimes people who are in between jobs or just really difficult, it's temporary. We don't have the funds to help people long term. But one of the roles of the deacons is to provide mercy, show mercy. And so they actually help people that are in whatever situation it is. It could be job related, but it's not always job related, but it's temporary financial assistance for those that need that. It's completely confidential, by the way. Then we have a congregational care team. This is a group of men who provide specialized care to those who have acute, life-dominating, or long-term or crisis needs. This is crisis that needs specific intervention, perhaps specific care, long-term care. Really, really. So we're talking about addictions. We're talking about very, very broken marriages that are on the brink of ending. We're talking about really, really serious issues. Probably issues that weren't dealt with early, like they probably should have, and they've gotten really, really bad. And these men have special training, and women that are involved in this, men and women, to provide, you know, get you in counseling, get people the counseling and care that they need to help them get out of that crisis. And then we've just got the members. These are your friends, your family, the people that you know. You know, we talked about our Sunday school being your community, but you don't have to stay within that community. You know, you can. There are people that you're just going to know throughout the church just because you know them, because you sit in the same pew on Sunday and you get to know them, and that's great. We actually try to provide some opportunities for people. We call them bridge events. We try to provide opportunities where people can meet one another across generations and across, you know, just mix and mingle in ways that you wouldn't naturally mix and mingle in the church, because this is a very balanced church, you know, in terms of age. It's a good mixture. By the way, when Claude got here in 2000, I think the average age was over 60. Now, the average age now is about 39. But it's pretty evenly spread. I think that's a healthy thing for a church to have so many different generations represented. One of the things I always tell older people, older generations, that they don't realize how much younger people really want to hang out with them. They think that they don't, but they do. They like being able to connect with them. So anyway, here's our guy again, and he's he's. We want to, this is not perfect, but we want our people to be set up for care within the church, surrounded by care. The ministers, the elders, Sunday school, hospital team, women in the church, Stephen, congregational care, and the members. And there might be some other ways that care gets shown within the church, but these are just the primary formal ways that we try to surround our people with care and hold them up. But our members play a part in this as well. You got to put yourself in a context. If you're not in a Sunday school, if you're not connected with people, and you go through a crisis, don't be surprised if the support network's not there. Okay? And, you know, so you've got to put yourself in that kind of situation so that the support network is there, so that you have people to go to, and that people need you too, so that when they go through the crisis, you're there to help them. It's more blessed to give than to receive. And so the Christian life is not meant to be lived alone. God gave us each other to do it together. And so this is how we try to do that. Any questions about care network and community life and how we do it? Yes. Yeah, primarily it's small groups that those cell groups. We have a number of, yeah, good question. The best way to do it is through Becky and Rob. We have men's groups, we have women's groups, and we have co-ed groups. We also have, occasionally, we will have what we call a care group. These, you know, like a divorce care, grief care, or grief share, addiction, and abuse. Those are the four, you know, they're almost like recovery groups, people that have been through, and they've got a shared experience. And we don't have those going on constantly, but we try to do them regularly. So the small groups, whatever, you know, Becky, I don't know how many, there's probably 20 of each, 20 men's, 20 women's, or something like that. 20 groups. Mm-hmm. And they range from 2 or 3 people to 10 or 12. The best way to find it, though, we don't list them out because not all of them are open. You know, some of them are kind of, hey, this is kind of who we are. We've kind of gelled together. Others are ready to take on members. So talk to Becky or talk to Rob, and they will help you find a group.